Hi, folks. I'm Dakota Cohen. Thank you so much for checking out the Building Your Homestead podcast, where I talk with expert guests about agriculture, health, economics, technology, philosophy, and other topics that I believe will help us to peacefully exit the increasing tyranny of our world and start building a parallel system, one homestead at a time.
Welcome to Unhypnotized. I'm excited to announce our first sponsor, QuickBit, the crypto boutique. QuickBit is a Bitcoin-first company that specializes in hardware wallets, seed storage, education, and all Bitcoin needs. They've got tons of experience, provide fast shipping and excellent customer service, and they're authorized resellers of Blockstream, Jade, Trezor, Stampseed, and more. QuickBit is owned by my good friend Dale. He actually orange-pilled me, and he is a wonderful person to do business with. I highly recommend checking out QuickBit. These are real Bitcoiners running a real business. Okay, so welcome to our newest episode of Unhypnotized. I'm your host, Heather Keyes. And I'm excited to welcome our special guest for this episode, Dakota Cohen. So Dakota, as you come on, would you like to share a bit about yourself with us as we get started?
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me on the podcast, Heather. So yeah, I was born and raised on a mixed organic farm in central Alberta, Canada, and pretty much been a conspiracy theorist my whole life. So I'm just a natural fit for Bitcoin. For the last 10 years, I've been managing our family farm with my parents. We do direct market pasture-raised meats. So grass-fed beef, milk-fed pork, pasture-raised eggs, things like berries and fruits that we're starting to grow as well. We deliver those all across central Alberta. And I also run a homestead design and mentorship business with a couple colleagues where we help homesteaders from around the world to basically exit the matrix and kind of get back to the land.
Oh, that sounds awesome. It's so great to be able to take something that you learned and then help other people do it, isn't it?
It really is. I'm very often reminded of just how much knowledge that I just grew up with that most people don't have anymore. And so, yeah, that's one of our big passions is being available for, you know, whether it's hourly mentorship or actually helping people design out their entire property to make sure that it's efficiently designed. It's a great way to kind of pass that knowledge on to more people who want to get out of the cities and get back on the land.
Ooh, that's such a nice thread to pull on to. That's a bit of a buzzword that could mean a lot of things, but you know, sustainability. Yeah. And sustainability, when it's real sustainability that creates a system or an ethos of lasting health and wellness. That's the way I think of sustainability.
Yeah.
And you know, we have that in common because I love helping other practitioners create sustainable businesses as well, because it's so easy to just get caught up potentially in all of these ways that we could run a business. But have you found that if people don't have the experience, they might get caught up in different practices that aren't really in alignment with sustainability?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are so many just unconscious paradigms that people bring into the homesteading and farming space, even if they don't have any experience with it. And there's even more if people happen to be, you know, raised on farms as well. So there's, you know, depending on which clients I'm working with, it takes a bit of a different approach.
You know, that's actually interesting because I think of Unhypnotized, like the name of our show, and how, you know, ultimately becoming unhypnotized is about becoming free from the things that you do or think or believe that are not serving your health and wellness.
Yes.
And I'm curious, like, what's an example of like an unconscious paradigm that someone might bring into that space?
Totally. So let's actually start off with sustainability. So that I think is actually, I don't know if it's an intentional psyop in the space, but it's one that's really taken over the conversation around, you know, agriculture and homesteading. So if you're just describing a system, and you're using the descriptor sustainable, you'd be describing whatever that system needs to maintain and basically extend itself. So if you're looking at agriculture, you know, what does agriculture need to, what are the conditions that it needs to maintain and sustain itself? So it's, you know, basically soil, sunlight, water, organisms, you know, the basic building blocks of life. And so if you're trying to describe, like, the current state of our ecosystems is very bad. Like we've lost huge amounts of biodiversity. We've lost tons of topsoil. Our water cycles are broken all over the planet. And so it's like, do we want to sustain that? Do we want to keep things the same as they are, or do we actually want to regenerate them? And so it's a subtle paradigm shift, but sustainability is really about, like, how do I do less bad? Mm-hmm. And regeneration is, how do I do more good? Mm-hmm. And so it's a really subtle one that is particularly in the kind of the environmental movement that, you know, there's obviously problems in the world. I don't prescribe to the, you know, carbon-based global warming narrative, but we do have environmental problems, pollution, biodiversity mm-hmm. loss, things like that I think are important. But when we're if we're coming at these problems of like trying to limit the damage, mm-hmm. it sets us off on the wrong path versus there's a new movement now, which is all about regeneration. And that's mm-hmm. actually the goal, is we can build thousands of years with the topsoil in a decade with the right tools and processes. So that's what's really exciting is get right off the back, making sure that people aren't basically hamstrung before they even start.
Yeah, it's like, are we sustaining just to survive, or is sustainability about thriving?
Yeah.
And I can see how now this is just so perfectly the, you know, the rabbit hole to take you into like the entire cosmic consciousness and everything that's happening in the world, because I think that's the movement. It's like, are we just surviving, or are we creating something that is about thriving and for future generations to thrive, not just survive?
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of touches on another really common paradigm that I struggled with for years. And when I finally undid it, it opened up so many doors, which was, so there's, in my book, I talk about the three paradigms. So there's the degenerative paradigm, which is pretty much the predominant, you know, the basically fiat culture, which is, it sees human beings as separate from and above nature. Mm-hmm. So we are separate from and better than everything else. You know, this, if you look at, you know, the Bible, this is where, if you're looking at like the dominion clause in Genesis, where it's like, you know, human beings have kind of dominion over everything on planet Earth. And then in the last maybe 20 years, there's another paradigm that's come up, which is the idea that humans are separate from, but less than nature. And this has also been around for a long time. This is, you know, the idea that, you know, human beings are just natural sinners and we're bad. And now it's been kind of secularized in this idea that human beings are a scourge on the planet. We're a cancer, we're a virus, and planet Earth would be better off if we just went somewhere else. And so the next paradigm is that human beings, we're not separate from and better than or worse than, we are nature. We are a keystone species on this planet. And just like the, you know, the wolves or, you know, any other top predator in any ecosystem, we actually play a crucial role in maintaining and regenerating our ecosystems if we are working optimally. And so that's another really big paradigm shift that I try to talk a lot about, is addressing the really the psychological damage that's come from both the previous narratives, which is that human beings are better than or worse than nature. And so we're either pumping ourselves up and you know, posturing like kind of, you know, the Donald Trump ethos, or we're whipping ourselves and, you know, oh, bad us, and like the kind of David Attenborough narrative. And neither of those serve the work that needs to be done. And so as soon as we adopt this idea that we are nature, we have just as much of a right to be on this planet as any other organism. And it's not about conserving and protecting and doing less bad. It's actually about creating more good, regenerating ecosystems, creating more abundance. And when you start to look at it that way, it's like we don't have a population problem at all, because the more people that there are, the more incredible brains there are to solve all the problems that we have that we're facing today.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point that a lot of our listeners could resonate with too, which is the oneness. Uh-huh. And, you know, coming into the oneness of life, like all life is one. And this is something that, like you were saying, as consciousness evolves and as life and life continues to life. And I believe that too. I believe there's always going to be solutions because we're all one, and nature is the wisest teacher of all.
Yeah.
And anytime that we spend time in nature, that's why I live right by the river. It's my life force. It's just, I can go there and all of a sudden everything makes sense, and I can get back to what I'm here to do, which is be part of heralding in a new humanity, yeah, you know, in the oneness. And I also like how you did bring in the kind of like the unraveling that's happening and that really needs to continue to happen, mm-hmm, of these of these beliefs and just even paradigms that we have taken on over time that are really not serving anyone or the health of the planet.
Yep.
And something that I heard you say, I think a couple times in some things that I was listening to you speak, was about, you know, heal yourself, heal the planet,
yeah,
and unilaterally heal the planet, heal yourself.
Yeah.
And I really resonate so much with that, being someone that did heal myself. And, you know, my journey is like probably many healers that first healed themselves to help others, but also many people that, you know, became to like the third paradigm in that sense of like the oneness, because, you know, whenever people, you know how people get really kind of upset if they're not into Bitcoin and they can almost get mad about it. You know how people get mad about Bitcoin? Like that's how people would get for me about like healing myself. Uh-huh. And I don't know, do you know Louise Hay?
Yes, I'm familiar with her. Yep.
Yeah. So Louise Hay was a pioneer in this in the 70s, where she, yeah, really brought in, you know, all of that, like heal yourself, yeah, and then heal your life. And this was like very controversial. And I think I do think that it is going to keep people sick by stopping them from believing that you can heal yourself. I still think it's controversial in some ways, you know, because like the medical industrial complex is like still creating this like, oh, it's not your responsibility. This is just like your genetics, or this, yeah, is just because of this, or a chemical imbalance in your brain, you know, and they're constantly taking the responsibility away from the people, yeah, which I think is like what keeps people sick the most, is having them not believe that they can heal themselves. And then therefore they're also going to, what's the word? They're going to like delegate their authority to others because they also don't believe they can heal the planet.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So I found that there's kind of, I call it the three G's that everyone blames all of their health problems on. So there's genetics, or God, or glyphosate, the kind of the three, or if folks aren't familiar, that's Roundup, which is the most, you know, herbicide in the world. However, in my work in both, you know, healing my own health problems and in regenerative ecosystems, I found that even though, yes, glyphosate is a terrible toxin and it's very problematic, it's no match for the rebuilding potential that our bodies and our ecosystems have. Like you can, yeah, with proper soil health and proper diet and I'm glad you touched on like Louise Hay, who's like a pioneer in the kind of the psychosomatic origins of disease. There's nothing that we need to be worried about, which is super empowering to realize that we don't need to keep giving our power away to these other external solutions. We have all the pieces that we need. And yes, I think diet does play a role, but even more importantly than, or just as important as diet is the connection back to ecosystem, whether you are the farmer yourself or you're growing your own food, or you are connected with the person who's growing your food. Back when we were on a gold standard, a third of the population was involved in agriculture. Mm-hmm. And now in the fiat standard, we have less than, you know, 2 or 3% of the population are involved in agriculture. And so it's no wonder why we're seeing this huge decline in the health of our ecosystems and in our bodies.
Mm, yeah. And the disconnection, you know, the disconnection that creates. I heard you talking to one of your friends that she was vegan and then she started eating meat. And yeah. I have a similar story where I did it to become healthy. And I was like, really on this spiritual journey, which was great. And then, you know, it was actually great to become vegan and then come back to meat. Yeah. Because what it did for me is it connected me to the meat I was eating.
Yeah.
You know, like that's when I started to really think about, well, this isn't just like this stuff in a plastic bag. And even at the time when I was married, he was a chef and we would get like a whole animal, you know, and clean it and pack it and store it. And you're just faced with like not only the process and the life, but also the respect and the honor of like that life and like what life is it's giving you.
Yeah.
And the energy and, you know, that's something that I hope to grow more relationships with now that I live in Alberta, because I had those more established relationships in Saskatchewan. And I think that the disconnect from, you know, people with their food is also a big part of the reason that so many find it hard to kind of not just believe, but take on the discipline in a sense to eat, to heal yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I can definitely see that. I mean, so much of, I've heard it said that like separation is the root cause of all disease or disorders, whether it's separation from, you know, like if you're in a kind of a somatic experiencing like trauma paradigms, trauma separates us from our bodies, from the present, from our environment. But if you're also, you know, separated from, you know, source or oneness or great spirit or whatever you want to call it, like that also, you know, causes a huge amount of psychological damage. And I think the same is true when we are separate from our environment or when we see ourselves separate from nature and above or below it. And so when we really start to engage in the circle of life, again, we don't have to grow all of our own food ourselves. I think self-sufficiency is actually another paradigm shift that we need to get out of, which I also held for many years, this idea that I had to do everything myself. Mm-hmm. And it's just economically, it's unfeasible and it caused a lot of stress. But yeah, when we reconnect to our community and to the place that's providing our food, like I've I don't know if you've ever been at like a meal or something like that, and other people like throw away a bunch of food, but like, it's like shocking to me how much food waste there is. And that's just something that, that was never even a possibility growing up, because like we were intimately involved in, you know, growing the gardens, raising the animals, butchering them. And so every little piece was sacred. And even if there was, you know, leftovers, nothing was wasted. It was either fed to the dogs or the pigs mm-hmm. or the chickens or composted. And just getting back into that, literally participating in the circle of life to whatever extent you can, helps to heal that separation. And it's just such a beautiful thing. And again, you don't have to be on, you know, dozens or hundreds of acres. You can do this even if you live in a balcony, or if you have a south-facing window.
Yeah.
You can grow a little bit, and or get a worm tower or something that to just reconnect yourself to the life processes on this planet. And that in itself is just profoundly healing.
I completely agree. I love how you said that, you know, separation basically being the root of all illness. Yeah. And when we were talking about Louise Hay and this psychosomatic kind of metaphysical reasons behind physical illness, that's an area that I've like geeked out on so hard in hypnotherapy, because people will often come when it's the most persistent, stubborn issue or other things haven't worked. It's kind of when people go, okay, fine, I'll try hypnosis. And it's my favorite areas, like complex issues like that, because it's miraculous, first of all. It's just like miraculous to see. And that's something I've been ranting a lot about, just this, how symptoms are the solution.
Yes.
And I heard you talking with Alec Zek about that too.
Absolutely.
And you know, the value of like our symptoms and either being like a healing crisis or a message, you know, a direction, like a place to pay attention where we can get the wisdom of our bodies. And like really, and I think that, you know, like the German new medicine that I geek out on too. Like I've been doing a lot of writing around that, because it's actually something I still get laughed at about when I say like, no, like even in hypnosis forums, when I say like, oh, it's just amazing when we can get to the metaphysical or the psychosomatic like reason for a stubborn physical condition, and then it goes away.
Yeah.
And people still think that's just ludicrous.
Oh, it's like, it's beyond me. Like I'm so convinced that I think German New Medicine is probably the closest system that's resonated the most with me, or that checks the most boxes. But I've seen that, in our animals on our farm, in my personal life. It's like, or there's another saying in permaculture, which is one of the kind of agricultural design systems that I was trained in. Where the problem is the solution. And so it's a very subtle paradigm, but it's the same thing in health. Like German New Medicine sees that as like, there is no such thing as sickness or disease. You are either healing or you're adapting. And when you get that, and it's hard, like, cause we're indoctrinated from, you know, the time that we're children, oh, Timmy can't play today. He's sick or whatever it is. And we loop that through, and oh, I can't do this because I'm not feeling well. And versus like, I'm in a healing phase right now, and I can't go out because I need to rest. Like that's such a, or one of the most tragic ones that I see is the autoimmune disease.
Yes.
Like the idea that, or cancer, the idea that your body, the cells in your body have turned against you.
Yes.
And are attacking you is such a, unsettling idea to hold. And just you can imagine what effect that would have on your psyche, your spirit, your body, and how that causes this kind of self-fulfilling prophecy that just makes things worse. And so again, so much of this stuff comes down to the paradigms. And it's funny because in the space that I work in, like in agriculture or homesteading, people are very like, you know, detail oriented. Just tell me like how to plant the thing or how to raise the animal. And it's like, no, you need to take several steps back and like look at your thinking. And then ironically, once you get that, you'll know how to look after plants. You'll know how to look after animals. But if you still think that there are pests and diseases and weeds that are out to get you, there's nothing you can do. You're going to be fighting nature and you're going to see yourself as separate and it's going to be a battle and you're not going to win. So yeah, as much as I have the experience to go into the technical know-how and I love doing that, but there's literally no point in doing that if you still have some of these core foundational beliefs that are at odds with how the world actually works.
Oh, that's so well said. What a wise mentor you are, people. I'm like jealous of people that get to work with you and learn from you, because that's exactly it. You know, I think a lot of times people think, say, even for example, with hypnosis, they think, oh, just tell me what to think or like tell me how to act. And they want the change, but then they don't, like, I think people think that it's like just like, in my industry, it's pretty big, like change your thoughts, change your life. And you know, it's just this like trying to apply something more as a coping mechanism or like as a way to get there faster. Yeah. And what really happens is like these massive paradigm shifts that, you know, we're talking about, because like, they're just normal for us. Like even when you were talking, I was like, oh, right. Like it's just totally normal for me to see that the solution is in the problem.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of the things that made me happiest in my life, like where I realized like when I was going through the worst time, I was like the happiest. and like, you know, really recognize that my happiness is not dependent on external things going smoothly. And, you know, this is a conversation that I think will always come up on this show, because we're seeing these behaviors like Scott Dietles and I, we talked about road rage and, or like these different type of behaviors or these different types of ways that people just like, just want to get ahead and like, just want to, and like, I think it's really valuable to point out that they don't realize that, that the change first happens within, and then that makes things easier. Cause again, you're working with nature, you're working with life instead of against it. And, you know, it's the same even with the practitioners that want to build a business. Like they just want always for me, like the step-by-step, or even they want to know, like, how can I hypnotize someone for this issue? Cause I do a lot of training, you know, over the years. And it's like, but you guys, like every human is different, first of all, but once you understand how the mind works, then you can work with anyone with anything. Because you understand fundamentally like how the program, like, I don't want to call it a program because I don't like actually connect. I don't like anymore connecting the mind to technology or any sort of computer. You know, because I feel like that's limiting, and maybe you can help me expand on this, because I want to, I think that the mind is so much more than that. Like, is so much greater than link. Like, I don't like this whole like just programs and unprograms, because I feel like it's so much more expansive.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, that's where, like, for me, the word that I like, rather than, you know, God or source or great spirit, I use the word like just life or complexity. And so complexity is this idea that there is some force in the universe that, where, you know, 1 + 1 = 15, and it's this, the sum is greater than the end is greater than the sum of its parts, that has these emergent and unpredictable patterns, and that's what's so fun about natural systems, including the human bodies, that there is this underlying intelligence that wants there to be something rather than nothing. And when we learn how to partner with that natural force, everything just becomes effortless. So there's two quotes that come to mind. One of them is one of my favorite philosophers, Lao Tzu. And he says that the master accomplishes more and more by doing less and less until he accomplishes everything by doing nothing. And then my own mantra, which is similar to that, which is drudgery is punishment for stupidity.
This is good. Yeah.
So I believe that all organisms have their own built-in sense of when their life energy is being wasted. And whether it's a conscious thing like human beings or even animals for sure have it, plant, they just, even like Pavlov's dog, like everyone knows that, you know, ringing the bell and getting them. Yeah. Food. But there were other experiments.
Elevating.
There were other experiments where he did, where it was randomized and where the animal couldn't find any pattern. And so they would just lay in the corner and die. They would just give up. And so I think human beings are the same in that, like when we have that innate sense, whether it's in other words, procrastination is precognition of drudgery. It's the realization that if I keep doing this thing, it's a waste of my life energy. So I might as well just lie here in my corner and die.
Yes. Oh, I'm stealing that from you, but I will quote you because I've been running these workshops on procrastination and speaking to like the cause of procrastination and how like, but this is so poignant because I also think it speaks to where we're at in the evolution of consciousness and humanity, because I think that old kind of work ethic of just like, get rich or die trying.
Yeah, I agree.
Or like, I mean, I'm Gen Xer, so I was definitely raised like work hard and like built my business by working hard. And then the more aligned that I got, and I know a lot of women resonate with this too, like coming back to femininity and receiving.
Yeah.
And like, as we learn to like come back to receiving and doing less, we're really faced with like, well, it's this whole even autoimmune normal that's become like the normal for women, especially because, and I believe it is part of that drudgery where we're just like taught to just keep going, make sure you're taking care of everyone and doing extra, doing more than enough. And like, it's like, even as I was, and I will be honest, like I'm still unraveling that paradigm in myself, just having grown up, even just in a society that was really pushing women to act like men to succeed in a man's world, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I, you know, in my own work and my own life, like it got so, you know, I tend to say the word life or like life's teaching me too. Like I will say God or source sometimes, but I think of it as life teaching me. And it got to a point where I would literally like, which is good because I was consciously unraveling this. And then like, I just couldn't even act from that place anymore.
Yeah.
Like I literally couldn't push myself. And it's something I have to continuously be cognizant of, or I just, cause I'm very creative. I have lots of ideas. There's lots of things I could do. And it takes like a lot of awareness to just be like, whoa, like you're thinking you have to do all of these things to be okay. And it is a very survival mentality over a thriving mentality. And so I love that you brought that. And I think that's really relevant, honestly, for people right now. And I think that even in the Bitcoin space, I find like there's still a real message around just like work harder than everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. So I totally agree. And this culture of, and I think Jordan Peterson has done more to revive this idea that the meaning of life is suffering. And that, again, I've literally heard him say, like, I was a big fan of Jordan Peterson for years. He's got a lot of great ideas, but where I kind of lost my interest in him in any way was, he literally said the meaning of life is to find the biggest cross you can bear and to bear it as long as you can. That's the meaning of life. And when he said that, I just thought, wow, what an excellent thing to teach your slaves. Right.
Yeah.
What an excellent value to teach in the current fiat world where we have, where, you know, at a minimum, 50% of our life energy is stolen from us, if you're lucky, and if not more, if you factor in all the different taxes and all the other BS and inflation. to then gaslight people into thinking the reason that you're not happy, the reason that you're not achieving is because you're not suffering enough. It's like that is such a sick idea. And so that's where, yeah, like my approach is totally the opposite. It's drudgery is punishment for stupidity. And yeah. That when you are on your life's path and you're in alignment with whatever the force of the universe is, it will feel effortless. It's not that there won't be work and that you won't be, doing lots of things, but it will feel like water running downhill versus being like contained in a box and having to like pressure yourself out of it. And so that for me is one of the kind of indicators that I look for myself, and that's what I teach in my book and my courses, is to get people to monitor their life for drudgery and whatever indicators you have for yourself, but also your ecosystem. So it's your animals, your pets, your plants, the wildlife around you. Like anytime you find yourself saying this sucks, it's because you're stupid if you're doing something that's out of alignment with the forces of the universe. And again, that's another, it's not so subtle of a paradigm shift, but it's massive. And it goes against basically every religion that's been around for the last, several thousand years. Yeah. But I think that's going to be the piece that's going to help us break out of and build this new world. And this is why I'm quite sad that so many Bitcoiners are going back into religion and trying to look at giving these very generous readings to some of these books that are just, I don't think they're there. I think there are some good lessons in all the world's religions.
Yeah.
My thoughts are, is by and large, they were, or at least what we see of religions now, they are the main lever that the state uses to control people.
And the way I kind of been seeing it too is like, oh, because they have, connected to that thread of spirit or God, but then try to logically or analytically structure it. Like that's how I see it on some level, because you can't, when you try to make sense of something, even like thought or mind or consciousness or God, as soon as you're trying to put words into it, you're not really getting, right? As soon as you can have words for it, like you're not getting it, because it is beyond words. It's an understanding. It's like, it's something way beyond words. But even just to come back to your other point, because I think that we've really touched on something that people could come back to, which is what worked before no longer works.
Yes.
And I think it's really valuable to put a highlight on that, because like I said, I've still been, noticing the drudgery or like recognizing when I'm in a drudgery, and it's something that Bitcoin has opened my eyes to, because how I feel about Bitcoin is how I felt about hypnotherapy when I found it. And I built my career, like it just kept growing and growing and growing. Everything I did just worked and grew because it was so in alignment with my purpose. It was so aligned. I just knew that more people needed to know about this. I had to bring this to the world. And, as I'm shifting more into like really finding my calling in the Bitcoin space, all I want to do is like read, write, create art, like talk about Bitcoin. And then I do have a bit of a conflict, honestly, where I'm trying to kind of push myself to like do some stuff in my hypno business that's just not nearly as easy.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of facing that, where even me, like, I know this, like, this is happening. And I still kind of try to like push myself. And like, that's how deep that programming goes.
It really is. And I mean, and it's no surprise, like, we're literally dealing with thousands of years of philosophical warfare that, I mean, like, it used to be the church and state worked in unison. And now in a secularized world, it's the intellectuals in the state the intellectuals have taken the place of the priest class, but their job is to convince people that whatever the state does is necessary for the greater good, and if those two things fail, the third one is brought in, which is it's inevitable anyways. So don't fight it. So much of this is just getting out of these loops. And one thing I will say is it's not to say that if you're feeling drudgery, that means that the thing that you're doing is you shouldn't do it. Sometimes the thing that you're doing actually is really important, but there's some paradigm or unconscious belief that is that's overriding, you know, the fact that it should be good. And when you address that thought pattern, then it becomes fun again. And like you were saying, that there's so much programming that's gone into teaching women that they should be men. And so like, think of how much drudgery is involved in that for women, where it's like, they actually, the things that they're doing, whether it's mothering or, you know, taking care of the home or, you know, these other aspects. I heard it said the other day that like, you know, being a woman is inherently luxurious. And I just thought that's just such a great way to put it. And like, but if you're fighting that impulse because society has taught you something opposite, it will feel like drudgery when you're doing those things. But when you confront that, you know, it's either the action or the idea has to go. There are no contradictions in the universe. And when you resolve that, it will feel like a pig digging a hole. Like it's, I always say, if you ever watch an animal in the wild, animals in the wild don't suffer. Everything they do is joyous, and they get eaten and they fight each other. So, but like by and large, everything that an animal does is they love doing it, which is why people love spending time in nature and getting that vicarious well-being from bird watching is because of the joy that they have, because they don't have these thought viruses that have been programmed into them by the state or their henchmen.
Like propelling them to do something outside of themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's, I mean, you say it very, very well, very poetically. You know, I think that you've obviously experienced it for yourself. And this is something that I think is also part of this, which is like embodiment, you know, where you take something, and because you're open to life guiding you, you learn from your experiences in a way that you embody it.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of what we're talking about. And I really like how you gave us the distinction around the drudgery, because it's true. A lot of times then people will just say, oh, I'm not meant to do this, or like, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
When really their whole soul is calling them to do that. But what is required isn't to push through and do the task. What is required is to like get the wisdom from the discomfort to be able to then partake in that task or in that experience in a more fulfilled or joyful way.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the opposite of just push through, right? Pull yourself up by your bootstraps and, you know, suffer harder. But it's also not this, you know, hedonistic, you know, endless pleasure seeking, high time preference, idea either. It's not that. It's in the middle, and it's a subtle, that nuance is really subtle of
it is
trying to find that balance. But I think that there's, at least for me, that's what resonates with myself. And since, you know, embodying that in my own life, and particularly with, you know, the animals on our farm, we've just seen like a tremendous difference in just the flow and the quality of life and the health of everything around us. It's like, whenever I find myself fighting something or involved in a Sisyphean task where you're pushing a rock up a hill, it's like I stop myself and I don't do anything else until I've either realized that the action I shouldn't be doing that, or there's some thought pattern that I need to address. And I spent a lot of time, you know, leaning on a fence post thinking about stuff. But I'd rather do that. Like, there's a saying in permaculture. It's like, in permaculture, you're more likely to do 100 hours of thinking and 1 hour of work versus in kind of the current degenerative industrial agriculture, you do 1 hour of thinking and 100 hours of work.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's really what I think the, you know, the part of what I hope the Bitcoin community can start to adopt is more of that nature-based philosophy, rather than slipping back into what I think are quite defeating paradigms that I see creeping back into the Bitcoin ethos.
Yeah, I like that you brought it around to that, because I mean, awareness at the end of the day is always the bomb. You know, when we can become aware of what we might be like forcing ourselves to do. And I think that's where we can have a lot of compassion, because like you said, this is thousands of years of unraveling that we're doing. You know, this is thousands of years of like a learned way of doing something that isn't for the health and abundance and well-being of humans.
Yes.
And so, you know, and whether it is in the Bitcoin space or in any business, you know, because even as you're talking, being in my business for 13 years, like that's the biggest thing I've learned is like, I know that it was really successful for me to sometimes just take imperfect action.
Yeah.
But I also know that now the more thought I put into it before I act, and intention, like the less burnout, like I save myself from burnout and also, you know, just not maybe enjoying it. Like I definitely had a point in my career where I was like, wait, like I have my own business and I'm like working it. Like I have to go to work.
Yeah.
You know, like I felt like I was like, it's Monday morning kind of type of vibes.
Yeah.
And that's when I knew, like, okay, this is not it. I really got to step back.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of that I was because of I didn't understand how contracted I was in fiat culture. Like, I didn't know that. I did everything right in a sense, like, not in a necessarily in a business sense, but in a business success sense.
Yeah.
And I got there and I did it. And then I just got penalized. And like, the more people I helped, the less I had. Like, it was just insanity.
It really is.
Like, and I really had to go through that dark night of the soul to be like, something is wrong here. See, you know, how I took on like this that was so subtle, like even for me as like a hypnotist and like understanding how we're constantly being hypnotized by the media, just like on a regular basis, you know, but even for me, I didn't know. I knew about Bitcoin. I even owned it, but I didn't know until I had to go through it and embody it myself, I guess, and see like, wow, I really suffered by taking on this paradigm of, you know, like try harder, work harder, and just pay more taxes, I guess. I mean, that's a simplification of it.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, and yeah, like you said, the better you do, the more you're penalized in our culture. And the less you do, the more you're rewarded. It's like there's all these things that exist in our culture that are everywhere. And I think this was for me what I love about Bitcoin is that it creates space. It allows me to own more of my time. I loved what Scott was saying about he was your previous guest about how like money is basically time. It's your life energy.
Yes.
And Bitcoin is the first currency that's ever been designed that allows you to really own 100% of your life energy and to store it in a way that no one else can steal it from you. And for me, like homesteading and farming is another way, or creating that kind of quote self-sufficiency is when you can create that a bit of space in your life where you don't need to be, you know, chasing the thing or paying the taxes or whatever it is. And you can start to really, think. There's another beautiful Japanese farmer, his name is Masanobu Fukuoka. And he said that the biggest problem in modern agriculture is that there's no time for a farmer to write a poem. And I just like, that's it. Like, there's just no time in our life for to think about these ideas. And then they're seen as, well, you know, armchair philosophy or just intellectual masturbation where it's pointless. It's like, no, these are profoundly important ideas. Yeah. And, you know, even aside from the 2000 years of, you know, brainwashing that's gone into this, if you've gone through elementary, junior high, and high school, that's 10,000 hours of indoctrination, which is the amount of time it takes to become a master at something. And so like I can't underestimate the importance of thinking deeply about these ideas and asking these deep questions. Like, what do I believe? Do I believe that I actually have a right to exist? Do I believe that I'm one with nature? And coming to grips with those questions, do I believe that there are invisible germs that are out to get me? which is a big one, particularly, you know,
that's huge
in today's day and age. And then the more of these things that you resolve and you realize, actually, I no longer believe any of those things. There's nothing to fear anymore. And it's like the only thing left is just to, and this is my life's mission is no one wants to join your revolution if it sucks. And so like the goal with our current company is to build this new revolution that's just filled with joy and abundance. And another motto we have in our company is like, we never argue, we inspire. Like, I don't want to fight anybody. If you disagree, great. I don't mind having a conversation, but what I'd rather do is show you the abundance that's coming from our farm and give you a glass of raw milk that's illegal to own or transport or even consume in Canada. And then why do you think that is? Is that okay? Is that the kind of culture that we need to live in? And
like,
you just start to unravel, but it's
curiosity will save the day.
Absolutely.
Curiosity. You know, unhypnotized, you know, I'm just looking because something that you said was part of my thread, because, you know, I was saying how coming unhypnotized is simply to stop believing things that make you feel unwell and believe things that make you feel well.
Yes.
And, you know, and then one of my thoughts after that was like, I don't believe that when I cough or sneeze, I'm spreading a terrible virus.
Yes. Exactly. Right.
And I live very well not believing that, you know, I'm good. I don't care if people are sick or coughing or sneezing. Like, I'm good.
Yeah, that's so liberating. And it can't just be like rote memorization or manifestation, like, which is what so much of the, you know, the new age movement has been co-opted into. It's, which is sad because I see a lot of those contradictions where someone will have this manifestation of abundance and goodness and all these things. And then they also believe that, there's invisible things that are killing them. It's like you can't have one of those has to be true and one of them is false. Yeah. And then it takes time. This is the thing. It takes time to set aside and do the research until you really can believe and know. It's even beyond believing. It's you have to know it. And that's what's so sick in our culture right now, which I think is contributing to the great malaise, is that no one has any time. And it's this kind of catch 22 where we're damned if we do and damned if we don't. And so it's, I really can sympathize with people where ignorance is bliss. And sometimes it is easier to not look at these things, but it really isn't. when you start.
We know. We know, but at the same time, there's a fulfillment that's not reached.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I'll get your last thoughts too. And like my last thoughts are on that, you know, where it isn't just about believing, because this is something in my industry that I've been speaking to and frustrates me too. It's like, I'm not going to just repeat a phrase to you in your mind, you know, like I might, if I've talked to you and it's really in alignment with what you're grasping, but I'm not going to just keep telling you, say this until you think it, because curiosity is the way that you know something and embody it.
Yeah.
Not repetition or forcing or, oh my God, I've got to do this to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know, so it's just been such a pleasure talking to Dakota. I know we could talk for hours.
Definitely.
Do you have any last thoughts for our listeners?
I think I would iterate the last thing I said, which is no one wants to join your revolution if it sucks. And don't argue, inspire. And I think there's a lot of people in the Bitcoin community that are really doing that. There's some that aren't. and I think they'll come around. But really, that's how we're going to turn the ship around, is don't worry about the people who don't see it yet, that aren't there. Just focus on living your best life in whatever way that looks like. And that certainly isn't about self-sacrifice and, you know, doing less bad and all these things. It's totally the opposite. And when you start to really embody and know some of the principles that we've been talking about, your whole life transforms and people pick up on it. Like that's what I've found. It's like, I used to fight people all the time and engage and like, I'm going to convince this guy that I'm right. And even if I was right, I was an asshole. no one wants to engage with that, versus as soon as you kind of take a step back and do your own thing, you're not pushing a rope up a hill anymore. And now you start to have your own gravity. People come to you and it really shifts the whole thing.
I've seen that too. I was talking with Krista. I was just recording Access Tribe before this with her on her podcast. I was a guest on her podcast and I was making mention of that. Like I've been there too, where you find something and you just want to share, because there are, I see how like some Bitcoiners are just really tired of trying to convince people. And I get it. Cause like you said, it's that drudgery. It's just like, it's not the way.
Yeah.
It's not the way, right? We don't have to convince anyone. Life will bring people to solutions when they're open to it.
Yep.
So I think those are wise words. Is there anywhere that people can learn more about you or find your book?
Yeah. So the best place to find out more is our website, buildingyourhomestead.com, where we've got resources and there's lots of free stuff. There's links to my books. I've got some courses on there. And we also offer one-on-one mentorship and even full-on design packages for people who are looking at setting up their own Bitcoin citadels or homesteads or regenerative farms. So,
awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, anytime. Take care.
Thank you for watching. Remember to hit the subscribe and turn on the notifications so that you'll know right away when we have a new episode with another great guest. And if this episode got you wanting to buy Bitcoin, reach out to me. I'm an agent with Bitcoin Well, and I have a link down below to book a time in my calendar. And simply just book a call with me and we can get you started buying Bitcoin. And don't worry, no pressure. Let's have a conversation and see how Bitcoin can improve your life. Ciao for now.
I hope you gained some actionable insights from this podcast about how you can fight the powers that shouldn't be by building your own homestead. If you did, please take the time to share this episode and click all those buttons to like, rate, and follow. This helps spread our message, it makes sure that you never miss an episode, and it sends a middle finger to globalists like Klaus Schwab. I also suggest that you sign up to my newsletters directly on my websites that are in the show notes. With the Government of Canada recently passing Bill C-11, the Online Streaming Act, the threat of me being censored or removed from mainstream media platforms like this one is becoming a reality. If that time ever comes, we can stay connected. Thanks again for listening, and take care until next time.